Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Alicia Ostreicher. Alicia Ostreicher is a major American poet and critic. Twice nominated for a National Book Award, she is the author of 12 volumes of poetry, most recently her renowned The Mother-Child Papers, reprinted by the University of Pittsburgh Press. As a critic, Ostreicher is the author of 2 path-breaking volumes on women's poetry, Writing Like a Woman and Stealing the Language, The Emergence of Women's Poetry in America. Her most recent critical book is Dancing at the Devil's Party, Essays on Poetry, Politics, and the Erotic. She has also published 3 books on the Bible, Feminist Revision in the Bible, the controversial The Nakedness of the Fathers, Biblical Visions and Revisions, a combination of prose and poetry that reimagines the Bible from the perspective of a contemporary Jewish woman, and most recently, For the Love of God, the Bible as an Open Book. Ostreicher has received awards and fellowships from the National Endowment for the Arts, the Guggenheim and Rockefeller Foundations, the Poetry Society of America, and the San Francisco State Poetry Center, among others. She lives in Princeton, New Jersey, and teaches in the Low Residency Poetry Master of Fine Arts program at Drew University. Her new collection of poems, entitled The Book of 70, will be published by the University of Pittsburgh Press in the fall of 2009. Hi, Alicia. How you doing?
Hi, Jan. I'm doing good.
Oh, good. We're so happy to have you here, and especially hearing some of the mother-child papers and some from your new book. It's very exciting. So go ahead.
Okay. So I want to read a little bit from the mother-child papers, which is a book that I began in May 1970, during the time that we were in the middle of the Vietnam War, and it was right after we bombed Cambodia. We invaded Cambodia and shot the 4 students at Kent State. My son was born, and I found myself thinking a lot about having a boy child in time of war, which means all of human history. I'd had 2 daughters before that, but having a boy in wartime was really different. Plus, this particular childbirth, after I had had 2 natural childbirths, I got stuck with a doctor who gave me an epidural that I didn't want, which made it impossible for me to feel the birth of my own child. And I was very angry. And the parallel between my country invading a helpless, smaller country and this doctor invading my helpless body was very clear and very systematic. Crime of opportunity. So the opening piece of this book is a prose poem called Cambodia, which is about that. And it ends with this paragraph. It says, "Our bodies and our minds shoot into joy like trees into leaves. Playfulness as children, sex, work with muscles, work with brains. Some bits survive where we are lucky or clever or we fight. The world will amputate what it can, wanting us to be cripples. Cut off from joy, how many women conceive? Cut off how many bear, and cut how many give birth to their children. Now I am one of them. I did not fight. Beginning a day after my son's birth and continuing for a week, I have sword-like headaches, which I attribute to the spinal. I'm 33. In the fall, I will be back at work, back east. My husband and I have 2 daughters, both all right so far, and now the son for whom we were hoping. There will never be a next time. What does this have to do with Cambodia?" And the opening leaves that open question just hanging there. Then there's a whole sequence of poems that go back and forth between the consciousness of the just-born child and the consciousness of the mother. Here's a little bit of that, starting with the baby being born. Goes, was dreaming, water was falling and rising all along, could not see, then a barrier, a color red, then cold and very afraid. Now the mother, they hoist it, shining, they support it under artificial lights, under the neck and knees. It is limp as a glove, a handful of tendrils. The mother watches it inhale and flex, the blood clot over the navel already brown. The father is blushing. He notices how the genitals nod and bob, ornamental and puffy, mushrooms and lady slipper. Do you hear this fellow yell now? Smiles the doctor. He'll be a soldier. They have wiped the flesh. It becomes a package. They wheel it away, clean and alone. The mother rests on a plump pillow and is weeping in the pretty room. Her breasts are engorged. She is filling with desire. She has thrown a newspaper to the floor. Her television is dark. Her intention is to possess this baby, this piece of earth, not to surrender a boy to the ring of killers. They bring him, crying. Her throat leaps. And the baby again. And sleep. And cry. La, la. And cry. And sleep. So that's from the opening of that book. And the book goes, yeah?
Well, let me ask you before you move on. You talked about systematic invasion, and I'm wondering about the reprinting of this book at this time in history, you know, by the University of Pittsburgh Press. You know, it's been many years, and yet we're still in wartime. And how can you talk a little bit about the parallels that you see now and the significance of reprinting it now?
Yeah, well, what's interesting is that the University of Pittsburgh Press wanted to reprint it and said, this is timely. It was first printed in 1980, then it was reprinted in 1986 by Beacon Press, and it's been out of print for a while. And when I asked Beacon if they would be interested in it, they jumped on it and said, this is timely. Would you write a preface? So I thought, oh, sure, I can write one or two pages, and I wrote six pages. Thinking about what's changed since I started the book at a time when people were not writing about childbirth, people were not writing about motherhood from the point of view of mothers. And that has really changed hugely. Women now write about everything, including pregnancy, childbirth, abortion, raising children, losing children, the whole works. I have a whole shelf full of volumes of mother-child poetry, you know, whole anthologies. And then there are all the individual poems. So it's on the map. But what hasn't changed is we're again at war, or I should say we're still at war, because there has never been a very long period when we were not involved in conquering something. And I remember something in Adrian Rich's book of Woman Born, where she talks about having a conversation with a French woman, and she tells this woman she has three sons, and the woman says, "Ah, madame, vous travaillez pour l'armée. Lady, you're working for the army." And that's what mothers are still doing. And some of them accept it, and some of them don't.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Alicia Ostreicher, reading from her book, The Mother-Child Papers. You have some other poems in that book that are groundbreaking. They still feel groundbreaking to me. I mean, yes, there are a lot of poems written by women now about these different issues, but the way that you say things is still has the distinct feeling of the unsayable and unspeakable.
Oh, good. Well, I recognized early in my life that it was a lot of fun to say the unsayable and the unspeakable, and to bring what is buried up into language, and to bring what's unconscious into consciousness. Okay, so here, for example, is a poem about the sibling of the newborn. Song of the Abandoned One. Kill the baby. I am sorry. Kill the baby by poking its eyes, by smashing its head, by hitting it very hard in the body. Stupid father and mother. Do you want to see something? In the garden, the calla lily that was the biggest, well, it broke. Snails are on it. Snails are on it. Very ugly, and I don't care. I can rub my quilted cotton blanket against my cheek, and I want my own silver cup with milk in it, and I want to push my blanket on top of the rubber arms and legs and ugly doll face. Please, can you kill the baby? I am sorrow. Kill the baby. Well, anybody with siblings understands that's kind of normal.
It is, and it's often unspoken in that direct way. You know, there's a lot of resentment that then later turns up in therapy.
Right. And meanwhile, everybody's saying, oh, don't you love your little baby sister? Don't you love your little baby brother? Yeah.
Yeah, what we're supposed to feel, what we're allowed to feel and say.
So for me, it's really important to get at what is real and not supposed to be there, and bring it out and make it less phobic. But here's a nice one. Can I read a nice poem?
Sure.
Oh, good. You know, I write some nice poems too. And this one, the book goes on through 10 years off and on of being a family. And this one is called His Speed and Strength. His speed and strength, which is the strength of 10 years, races me home from the pool. First, I am ahead, Nike, on my bicycle, no hands, and the Times crossword tucked in my rack. Then he is ahead, the Green Hornet, buzzing up Witherspoon, flashing around the corner to Nassau Street. At noon sharp, he demonstrated his neat 1.5 flips off the board. Oh, brave. Did you see me? He wanted to know. And I, doing my backstroke laps, was Juno Oceanus. Then for a while I watched some black and white boys wrestling and joking, teammates, wet plums and peaches touching each other as if it is not necessary to make hate, as if Whitman was right and there is no death. A big wind at our backs, it is lovely. The maple boughs ride up and down like ships. Do you mind if I take off? He says. I'll catch you later. See you, I shout and wave as he peels away, pedaling hard, rocket and pilot. Okay, here's another nice one. This is for my first daughter, and it's called In the Dust. from when she was 12 in the dust. This year, she announces to us all at dinner, in ballet class, she has discovered perfection. At the swimming pool all day, she practices dives, stretches out on her towel like an array of astronomical sensors. She reads The Great Gatsby, cries. It is deep summer. It is blazing August. I read. I write poems. I make moist love with my husband, quarrel with him, cry, make turbulent love. He tends the garden. She is polite to me. August, heat, dust. When I wash her hair, I want to run my hands over her nude body, her readiness. On the birthday morning, we drive to the jeweler's in the jeweled August sun. She takes my hand to cross the bright street, asking if it will hurt, and I say it will sting like a doctor's needle. She runs ahead to the shop where the bearded jeweler punctures her lobes. It is evening. We are carrying dishes, glasses, and wrappings in from the garden, wearing our long skirts, saying the party was nice. Her girlfriends came and admired her 14-carat studs, and they played sedately. Now she lingers and rubs her feet in the grass. What is that whirling in the dust? What is that powerful movement everywhere, so rapid she cannot see it? The fireflies are making their phosphorus slow circles, the apple trees ripening, and she is going willingly. I send her willingly.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Alicia Ostreicher. She's reading from her new book entitled The Mother-Child Papers, published by the University of Pittsburgh Press. Can you talk a little bit about desire and the desire in that poem, the acknowledgement of desire by the mother in the child, another subject which is not supposed to be talked about, and also the mother seems like in our culture mothers are not supposed to even have desire once they become mothers. So
that's one of the forbidden things in our culture for mothers. To be erotic beings, not supposed to happen, or if happening, it's bad. Mothers are all supposed to turn back into virgins or something like that. So, in this poem, I deal both with the mother's desire toward her daughter and her desire to let her daughter go forward into her own life of erotic desire. And I didn't know I was going to write about that before I found myself doing that. I thought I was going to be writing a nice birthday poem.
Really?
Yeah. But she had said that she wanted her ears. She had said when she was 9 that when she was 12, she wanted her ears pierced. And so it turned out, without my planning, that the piercing of a girl's ears for the first time is a coming-of-age ritual. And this emotional fact opens the door to what coming of age is about. And it's about coming into puberty, coming into desire, coming into the life of Eros, which should be experienced as a blessing.
Mm-hmm. And yet we talk nothing of it between mothers and daughters.
And yet it's a taboo subject. And I realized early on the way taboos work is that you're unconscious of them. You don't know it's a taboo until it comes up and you break it.
Right, right, right. And you know, you have no problem in doing that. I mean, or is there a struggle when you're writing, when you cross that line, or not?
Well, there are things that I am still afraid to write about, but I have tried to train myself and to tell my students, write what you're afraid to write. Go where it's risky. Go where the prohibitions are. Let yourself be conscious of them. And then they stop being prohibitions and they start being detoxified, being normal, which is all to the good.
Can you tell us what you're afraid to write about?
Nope.
I didn't think you would. But.
No, I'm afraid to tell you.
Okay. Okay, we'll have to wait for those poems. You have some poems, some new poems that you're thinking of sharing with us from your upcoming
book. Yeah. The upcoming book is called The Book of 70, and I'm planning for it to have 70 pages. It'll be a slender book. So it's about, it comes out of moving right along and getting to that age. So here is a poem called Insomnia. But it's really fear you want to talk about and cannot find the words, so you jeer at yourself. You call yourself a coward. You wake at 2 a.m. thinking, failure, fool, unable to sleep, unable to sleep, buzzing away on your mattress with two pillows and a quilt. They call them comforters, which implies that comfort can be bought and paid for to help with the fear, the failure. Your two walnut chests of drawers snicker. The bookshelves mourn. The art on the walls pities you. The man himself beside you, asleep, smelling like mushrooms and moss, is a comfort, but never enough, never. The ceiling fixture lightless, velvet drapes hiding the window, traffic noises like a vicious animal on the loose somewhere out there. You brag to friends you won't mind death, only dying. What a liar you are. All the other fears of rejection, of physical pain, of losing your mind, of losing your eyes. They're all part of this, paw prints of this. Hair snarls in your comb. Now notice the clock is the single light in the room. Okay, there's some memory poems in this new book. And this is kind of a combination of now and the past. It's called West 4th Street. This is a New York poem. I have to say, I'm a New York girl. I haven't lived in New York since I was 18, but someday, if I'm good, God will let me go and live in Greenwich Village. West 4th Street. The sycamores are leafing out on West 4th Street, and I am weirdly old. Yet their pale iridescence pleases me. As I emerge from the subway into traffic and trash and patchouli gusts, now that I can read between the lines of my tangled life, pleasure frequently visits me. I have less interfering with my gaze now. What I see clearly, and with less grievance and anger than before, and less desire. Not that I have conquered these passions, they have worn themselves out. And if I smile admiring four Brazilian men playing handball on a sunny concrete court, shouting in Portuguese, goatskin protecting their hands from the sting of the flying ball, their backs like sinewy roots, gold flashing on their necks. If I watch them samba with their shadows, torqued like my father 50 years ago, when sons of immigrant Jews played fierce handball in Manhattan playgrounds. If I think these men are the essence of the city, it is because of their beauty, since I have learned to be a fool for beauty.
Nice. We have time for one more poem, I think.
Okay.
And before you read that, I want to remind our listeners that you're reading from your new collection that's not out yet, The Book of 70, and that's going to be published by University of Pittsburgh Press in fall 2009. So something, even more poems to look forward to. So
this poem is called The Blessing of the Old Woman, the Tulip, and the Dog. To be blessed, said the old woman, is to live and work so hard. God's love washes right through you like milk through a cow. To be blessed, said the dark red tulip, is to knock their eyes out with the slug of lust implied by your upended skirt. To be blessed, said the dog, is to have a pinch of God inside you, and all the other dogs can smell it.
That's great. It's the poetry of Alicia Ostreicher. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jan.
You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the arts entertainment news weekly published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.